Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. It's Thursday, the 7th of August. Hope you're doing okay. Coming up, Reform come in for criticism over how they're running meetings in Kent. A fight to save a marching band in the county goes on, and conservationists celebrate an historic breakthrough as they try to reintroduce the red-billed chough here in Kent. But first today, a man has told a court he's scared to walk the streets after being stabbed by a homeless man in Gravesend. Well, Lucy joins me now on the podcast with more on this story. Firstly, Lucy, how did the attack come about?
Well, the victim, who was 17 at the time, had stepped into an argument Gary Stevens was having with a woman outside a Tesco store. CCTV footage shows the teenager throwing some sort of liquid over Stevens, who'd been sitting outside the express store on New Road in August 2022. The pair then square up to each other, exchanging blows and rolling around on the ground. Other members of the public got involved, and the teenager walked away to a nearby kebab shop.
And that footage was played out in court, Lucy.
That's right. And it later shows Stevens, who's 40, crossing the road and walking up to the takeaway before lunging at the victim. There's another scuffle, and at one point the teenager is seen lifting his top to look at his left side. The prosecutor described how the victim felt something go into him but didn't initially think he'd been stabbed. And in a victim impact statement, he revealed the wound was just 2 inches from his lungs. He's described having flashbacks and says he was lucky to be alive.
And what do we hear from Stevens' defence?
They said he'd pleaded guilty to wounding with intent at the earliest chance. His team also described how one witness saw a really cocky young man who looked like he was up for a fight and then approached Stevens and punched him 4 times. He added there was a significant degree of provocation before the attack. Recorder Matthew Helen sentenced Stevens to 1 year and 2 months in prison.
Lucy, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and the death of a musician found under a table at his home in Canterbury remains a mystery. 42-year-old Ben Wright played drums in local bands and was discovered at the bungalow in Cobham Close in March. A coroner's concluded the cause of death was unascertained. You can read tributes from Ben's family within a story at Kent Online. A man's in a serious condition in hospital following a crash in Margate. He was riding a motorbike that collided with a car on Westbrook Avenue on Tuesday afternoon. Crash investigators want to hear from anyone who saw what happened. A security guard who carried out a sex attack at a Kent hospital has avoided being sent to prison. Police also found hundreds of abuse images when they searched Christopher Fowlson's home as part of their investigation after it happened at Medway Maritime in 2021. The 40-year-old from Rock Avenue in Gillingham has been given a suspended jail term. A woman's been charged after a car reportedly collided with parked vehicles and a caravan decking in Ramsgate. Police were called to Monkton Road and then the Fox Hunter Holiday Park on Monday afternoon. A 63-year-old is accused of drink driving and is due in court later this month. A group of asylum seekers have crossed the Channel to Kent on the day the new one-in-one-out deal with France came into force. Children were among those seen being brought into the port of Dover by UK Border Force yesterday after travelling on a small boat. Now, the new scheme means adults can be sent back to France while an approved asylum seeker would be brought safely to the UK. Next today, and the leader of the opposition at Kent County Council has criticised the way Reform UK are behaving in cabinet meetings. Lib Dem councillor and leader of the opposition at KCC, Anthony Hook, has been on a recent episode of the Kent Politics podcast. He says it's been an interesting couple of months since the local election.
I think the result gave Reform a win that was wide but shallow. And what I mean by that is wide in the sense that they won 57 seats, and that was across the county in lots of different places. But shallow, they only got 37% of the vote. So almost 2 times the vote against them and for them. And in Kent County Council's 135-year history, no administration has ever been formed with a vote share as small as that. The Conservatives sometimes got a majority of the vote, or sometimes, like in 2021, they got in the high 40s, more votes against them than for them. But this is quite new. And I detect in Reform a bit of an arrogance, to be honest. I think they overestimate the size of the share of the population that actually agrees with them, and their own propaganda is perhaps going to their heads. And I certainly think if the election was rerun tomorrow, they probably would not do as well. And we'll see what the people of Kent think in 2 years or 4 years' time when there are further local elections.
Mm. What's your impression of the new leader at KCC, Lyndon Kemp-Curran?
I think it's pretty disappointing, not just the leader, but the whole administration is pretty thin as to what they're actually doing, and quite a lot of spin and sound bites and clickbait rather than substance. I mean, they cancelled all the meetings in June. Meetings are really important for councillors to represent the views of their residents and to exchange views with the senior officers who run the council day to day. So that has been, I think, a loss that the council's taken as long as it has to really get going. Their Doge thing was, I think, a bit of a damp squib. I mean, they came in with a celebrities and a big song and dance about this money they would find. They haven't found anything. In fact, they made claims that have just been proved to be not true. And the recent scrutiny committee, the committee went through the things that Zia Yusuf has tweeted, and none of them were true. And none of the reform councillors in the room were even willing to try and defend them. And then 10th of July, you had the last full council, only the second one that's taken place. And the agenda was ridiculous. I mean, the administration can put as many items on the agenda as they want. The only substantive item they put on was about councillors' own pay. Well, there's much bigger issues facing the people of Kent than that. Opposition groups can put one item on the agenda each. The Greens put an excellent motion on domestic violence. The Liberal Democrats put an excellent motion on blue badge disabled parking permits. So I would say the opposition is far more in touch with what people are actually caring about. And the behaviour of reform councillors that meeting was extraordinary. They voted down the domestic violence motion and they put a wrecking amendment into gut the blue badge motion, which I found really shocking. The reform group have behaved in a kind of a pantomime fashion of giving their leader a standing ovation every time she speaks, not really answering the questions and treating them like political rallies.
Lucy's also been chatting to Maxwell Harrison, who's Reform's chief whip at KCC, to get a response to those accusations.
Mr. Hook's comments are disappointing, but not surprising. On the 1st of May this year, you know, tens of thousands, over 170,000 people went out and voted for Reform UK on the 1st of May for real change. We have got a sense of energy and enthusiasm, excitement, which is why we're now topping poll after poll after poll. I believe it's over 50 to 60 national opinion polls we've just topped. So yes, we're excited and we have a lot of work to do. So our behaviour in the council chamber when Lyndon Kemp-Curran made her first speech, yes, we were excited because this is a turning point for Kent. Our county has been driven into the ground for the last 20 odd years under the Conservative administration. The people of Kent on the 1st of May turned around, rejected the Tories, rejected Labour, and in many regards as well, also rejected the Lib Dems because they want a sense, a new party, they want new vision, new ideas, new leadership. That's why we're excited. And we're not going to apologise for A, rallying behind our leader, or B, reflecting the mood of the people of Kent.
Do you think there's enough experience in the party to be running an authority like KCC?
No, of course. I mean, you know, we're not career politicians. We're not going to pretend it. And I actually think that's why so many people went out and voted for us on the 1st of May. You know, yes, have many of us been in elected office before? No, we haven't. But that's something we're proud about. And actually, contrary to what the opposition parties say and claim that this is a council in chaos, it's absolutely not. We're getting over the job at hand. That's why residents in this county are inundating our emails with support and many thanks and gratitude.
I suppose for residents as well, hearing these comments that Anthony Hook's made, they might be concerned that perhaps their issues aren't being taken seriously. Is there any kind of reassurance you can give to them?
Oh, no, wholeheartedly. You know, we know that the opposition are going to try and take up the airwaves, but residents have got our full assurances that we're doing the job that they elect us to do. We're now making sure that net zero is dead at Kent County Council already. We've saved in excess of £39 million from scrapping silly ideas. And people know that's what we stood for. That's why they voted for us. That's why so many people who voted back in 2016 for Brexit but haven't voted since came out and voted for us now. So, yes, ignore the silly comments going to be made. They're going to continue happening. You know, even this, you know, I was at a Swellborough Council meeting last night, you know, and all other opposition parties were saying that we were cancelling meetings. It's simply not true. We're getting on with the job at hand. We're very proud of the work we have already done. But we look forward to make sure that when the big issues arise, whether that be potholes, LGR or other massive things that face this county council, we will tackle it on with every bit of strength that we've got and put the people of Kent first.
This weekend marks 100 days since Reform UK came into power at the county council.
Kent Online reports.
A man's been charged following reports of parked cars being damaged in Sheerness. Police seized an axe after being called to Rose Street on Saturday. A 42-year-old is due in court next month. Two men were also arrested on the same day following an attack in Winstanley Road. Officers seized Class A drugs and an 18-year-old has been charged. Elsewhere, police are trying to trace a group of boys who helped an 18-year-old woman who was approached by a man in Canterbury. It happened in Westgate Gardens last Friday. She was then taken to a property in St Peter's Street before returning to the park. The suspect left when three boys approached. A man has since been arrested. A plan to cut the speed limit on Sheppey Road following the deaths of two people has been scrapped. A man in his 20s died after being hit by a car on Marine Parade last year, while a woman died in a collision in 2019. Campaigners wanted the stretch between Catamaran Yacht Club and Barton's Point Coastal Park reduced to 30 miles per hour. Police say it couldn't be accurately enforced. A property in Tunbridge has been boarded up by police following reports of antisocial behaviour. Neighbours had complained about loud music as well as threats and verbal abuse from people living at the house in Taylor Close. The force went to court to get a three-month closure order, which bans anyone from going there. Now, a Kent MP has raised concerns about Britain's last remaining St John Ambulance marching band being forced to close down. The group is based on Sheppey, but they've been told by the charity to leave their site. Bandmaster Dean Faulkner has been telling us about the situation.
Unfortunately, St John nationally is going through a little bit of a financial crisis and they're now reducing their portfolio of properties. And therefore, we have been under a review for the last 4 years. So really unsure of what's going on and whether we're going to be closed or not. That dramatically sort of reducing the amount of buildings that they own because of the cost. And we were told on the 26th of July with no pre-warning that we were being closed and we had 8 weeks to leave the premises. It's a bit of a tough one to take in regards to that. We are the last marching band in St John. There is only one other band, which is a static band. So. Yeah, we will be celebrating our 80th anniversary next year. Hopefully that will still take place if our powers that be can change the decision and look at the value we just bring, not just financially, but really to the community that we're based in.
Band members as young as 10 will be impacted by the decision. 90-year-old William Jarvis is among the older volunteers.
I joined in 1951. In 1952 was the first time that we went to London to represent the band at leading the parade from Smithfield Market, the cadet section, because there were so many on parade. We only led the cadets, which was over 2,000. When you think it's been your life, how can I say, without the band, I would have nothing. It's my life. It's given me a good life, and I don't want to see that disappear. The friendship of the band is even better than, can I say, a family. It's really great.
Well, Gabriel Morris from our colleagues at KMTV has spoken to Sittingbourne and Sheppey MP Kevin McKenna about the closure.
I'm pretty concerned. I wasn't in a St John's ambulance myself, but both my sisters and my brother were actually badgers and were in the St John's ambulance band when I was a kid. I mean, that wasn't on Sheppey, that was in Welling and Bexar Heath. But so I sort of know how important these things are to a community. And the band's celebrating its 80th anniversary this year. And they've been on the island for, what, 117 years, I think? This is a long, long commitment to the island. And I think what really frustrates me is it's clear that on the Isle of Sheppey, there's a really strong contingent in the St John's Ambulance. And those links to its community are just being completely overlooked.
And I know St John's Ambulance says it's a difficult decision and to sell this building, but for cost reasons. I mean, what would you say to St John's Ambulance? What would your message be to them today?
Look, I absolutely understand what they're saying, you know, in terms of times are tight. They've been struggling since the pandemic. But look, here you've got a cluster of people. You know, we've got 83 people associated with this branch. That's a lot of individuals and then their wider friends and family. Clearly, actually, this is a nucleus that they could be building around. And to lose that bit of the heritage, I think it loses part of the soul of what St. John's Ambulance actually is. Its connection to real communities, its connections to its heritage. You know, it's more than just a first aid outfit. It's something that clearly on Sheppey is what the St. John's Ambulance used to be. And I think they should look to some of those community connections and really think about, they've got a cluster here, willing support. You've got other organisations nearby like the Cadets, the Scouts, the RNLI. You know, you've got a rich set of community organisations on Sheppey, and St John's Ambulance really needs to play its part as part of that.
And we've had this statement from a spokesperson for the charity.
St John Ambulance values the long-standing service and dedication of Sheppey band members, and we recognise the strong connection they have to the building that has been their home since the 1970s. We are strongly committed to the future of the band in the region, and there has never been any suggestion the band should be disbanded. Our focus is on ensuring that both the band and other St John members, including our cadets and badgers, have a suitable meeting place that can continue to meet both their and the wider organisation's needs into the future. The decision to close the building took a range of factors into account, including its use, condition, running costs and long-term sustainability. This review was part of St John Ambulance's strategy to develop a high-quality estate, supporting the delivery of high-quality first aid and community services across the country. While the Sheppey site has played an important role for over 50 years, we must now look to the future. St John Ambulance is grateful to all our volunteers for their continued commitment and service. We will remain closely engaged with those affected to ensure they have the facilities they need to continue to serve their communities with the skill and commitment that has characterised their service to date.
Kent Online reports.
The boss of a pub near Maidstone says trade has been killed off by a road closure to fix a water leak. Jason Tharp, who runs the Georgian in Leeds, says emergency work started on Monday and yesterday they had no bookings. South East Water have apologised for the disruption, but say the closure is necessary to keep people safe while they repair the road. Meantime, work is underway to improve water supplies to homes in two Kent villages. Bosses at South East Water say it'll involve replacing around 800 metres of pipes that supply homes in Smarden and Pluckley. Road closures will be in place this month and in September. A regeneration project in a part of Herne Bay has been given the go-ahead. It'll centre around the derelict Tivoli Arcade and nearby Beach Street. Ideas for the area were originally put forward back in 2018 and included 33 homes, but the whole thing was delayed by the pandemic. Council bosses say the new scheme will now be redesigned. Meantime, plans have been put in to reopen an empty pub on Sheppey and add a B&B. The Aviator in Minster shut in January last year. The new owners are suggesting building a garden room extension and refurbishing the rest of the building to include 10 new rooms. It's been confirmed an electric car firm is taking over two dealerships in Kent that closed earlier this year. BYD is moving into the sites on Broadoak Road in Canterbury and Crowbridge Road in the South Willsborough part of Ashford. It'll increase their number of dealerships in the UK to six. The US Vice President is going to stay at a Kent mansion for a summer holiday. JD Vance has been invited to Foreign Secretary David Lammy's country house at Chevening near Sevenoaks. Both of their families are set to join them for the visit. And conservationists are celebrating an historic breakthrough today as they try to reintroduce the red-billed chough to Kent. It's been more than 200 years since the birds were last living independently on chalk grassland in the southeast. Liz Corrie is the chough release supervisor at Wildwood Trust and she's been sharing a very exciting update.
We've got some amazing news. We actually have our first wild hatch chick flying around Dover. So this is the second year for this pair that have tried nesting. The first year they had a bit of success in that they were able to have a chicken in the nest. It didn't quite make it to fully fledged age, so it sort of perished around 5 weeks old. But this one has come out of the nest. It's been flying around in the, within a few metres of the nest site, practicing its flight, learning about the environment, learning about peregrines, and then it's finally taken that first bold step and moved over to the release site. This is a huge milestone for this project. We've got this plan of 5 years of releasing captive bred chuffs, But the hope is that eventually they become self-sustaining. And part of that is that they breed for themselves in the wild. So last year was a bit of a surprise because they were still a bit young to be breeding in the wild. But this is the stage now where we want them to be breeding, and they should be. And this is really great because it can only get better from here on in. So in a couple of weeks' time, we've got a release of birds that have hatched in captivity this year. And they've come from three different sources. One is Paradise Park in Cornwall, who are the stud book keepers for choughs in the UK and Europe. And then we also have chicks from Wildwood Kent and Wildwood Devon for the first time.
Karen Weeks is the East Kent Downland Warden for Kent Wildlife Trust. She's been telling us why Dover is the perfect habitat.
The chough rely on chalk grassland for them to survive. They need the habitat for to forage on insects. They also rely on the grazing animals that we use on the chalk downland. So the grazing animals provide dung, which a lot of insects then use and populate and breed in, which the chough also used for foraging, particularly in winter months when the insects aren't necessarily around in the grassland. Kent Wildlife Trust have been working in the Dover area now for over 40 years, alongside other organisations such as National Trust and Whitecliffs Countryside Partnership. So we've been focusing, doing a lot of work on loads of sites just around the town in terms of restoring it back to chalk downland. About 50 or so years ago, these sites would have been open chalk grassland, which would have been grazed on by farm animals. But with changes in agriculture practice, those sites then weren't managed. So animals were taken off, and scrub then grew over, which is when ourselves and other organisations came in, clearing back the scrub and restoring areas of chalk grassland back.
It's hoped the new chough population in Kent will eventually be able to link up with others living across southern England.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first up, and Gillingham bosses say they're extremely disappointed after offensive language was directed towards a match official from the Gills End during Saturday's game at Accrington. The FA made the club aware and an investigation is continuing. Club MD Joe Comper says they won't tolerate such behaviour and anyone found guilty will be banned from Priestfield and Gillingham's away fixtures. It comes as another young Gills player has gone out on loan. Damien Theodore's returning to his old club Burgess Hill Town. Tate Holtham, Logan Dobbs, Harry Webster and Harry Bridle have also been loaned out to other teams as the new season gets underway. And in tennis, Kent's Emma Raducanu believes patience is needed before she can match the very top players. She's heading into this month's US Open in her best form since winning the tournament 4 years ago. The British number one from Orpington is now working with Rafa Nadal's former coach, Francis Roig. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. Now, that gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription. Whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to check out the latest Eat My Words food review. And we'll be back with the podcast tomorrow.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.